A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yahoo Finance presents It's a Jungle Out There, the podcast where we take a wild approach to work and management.
You can never mix up goats with sheep. While sheep are more fearful and shy, goats are inquisitive, reactive, and aggressive. When they feel threatened, they attack. They also organise the pack socially by horn structure and size. You can even train them to do your bidding. A Judas goat, for example, is a trained goat that leads sheep or other goats to slaughter while its own life is spared. In a way, it seems goats emulate some of the worst bosses and management practices the world of work has to offer. So what happens when your boss is a Judas goat? Bad bosses who repeatedly lead their own teams into trouble and escape with no consequences to themselves. And how does this affect the mental health of those who work for them? I'm Leanna Brinded, and I'm going to discuss what strategies workers can employ to survive a toxic boss. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. Joining me today is Stuart Henderson, Head of News at Yahoo UK, and Matilda Long, a journalist and editor at Yahoo UK, both the hosts of the upcoming podcast, Britain is a Nation Of. But before we get to that, we're talking today about goats on this podcast and what we can unpack about a lot of negative behaviour from goats and how it's emulated in the workplace. And of course, how this affects mental health. So what would you say, kicking off, would be one of the telltale signs of a bad boss?
So, full disclaimer here, Stuart is my boss. So,
yes, I am.
If he starts looking uncomfortable. No, I think one of the worst signs of a bad boss is undermining you and making you feel like you're not really achieving anything, even though you're putting a lot of hard work in. I think that's something that makes you feel really undervalued and just takes away a lot of motivation.
And so I know, Stuart, that in previous conversations talked about management, worker management on your guys' podcast. And there were a lot of things that we were talking about in there in terms of what constitutes as a bad boss and anecdotes. Mm-hmm. I know that you've got a whole plethora of things that you have to say.
The first thing that I think to say is that being a manager can also be a very tricky job as well. But very much, I think, from an employee perspective, I would say one of the telltale signs of a bad boss is someone who doesn't listen. And that can cover an absolute full gamut of things, whether it's listening about the importance of the individual piece of work they're doing, the singular project they're working on, their sort of broader career aspirations, how work is impacting their life outside of work. And I think that can often manifest itself as a boss who doesn't take the time to listen. And it's those practical steps of creating time within a boss's working week to listen to their staff that perhaps is where many bosses fall down.
Yeah, I mean, like when it comes to goats, for instance, I think there's a lot of the behaviour in goats that I've seen in bosses that I've had before that has, you know, manifested itself in like really awful situations. So, for instance, when we're talking about not listening, undermining, things like that, what can usually happen is, you know, it can be quite aggressive. And like with goats, one of the traits there is that when it comes to a situation where they feel threatened, they can be quite aggressive. Aggressive butt heads, that kind of thing. Obviously not physically in the office, because that would be actual assault. Maybe that's happened. But in terms of, I mean, I've found that like previously at other places that I've worked at, that there's been situations where there's that kind of physical element, that kind of feeling very aggressive and overpowering. And, you know, and I do think that happens a lot of male bosses.
I was just thinking as well that I think that's maybe more of a male trait. And possibly, I think some people can respond well to that. Some people respond really well to pressure, to aggression. And maybe the people who have experienced that when they were employees then go and do that when they're bosses, because they've actually found that to be a good technique. I would personally find that a horrible working environment.
Yeah, I mean, like some, you know, when when we talk with our friends or, you know, talk with colleagues in other places or here or, you know, wherever it is, there is sometimes that kind of, you know, physical element, like I was saying, where being a bad boss can't be just about the things to say, but sometimes about the mannerism, something about, you know, overpowering and using physical presence to sometimes intimidate. And so that, I think, is a huge thing that does, you know, affect. And when you have, like, bad bosses, it, you know, it can really affect what your psyche's like and how you do your work.
Is it, why does that, why do goats behave like that in the animal kingdom, do we know? Because I wonder if a lot of managers might use that kind of physical, and that can be also kind of almost sort of verbal aggression as well, is perhaps just as common, because it's a sort of a defence mechanism where they are the manager, they feel the need to contribute, they feel the need to assert their authority in whatever form that may be, and clearly they will get it wrong, sometimes a lot, depending on the individual. Is it a defence mechanism, do we think, or is it a proactive, I feel like I need to be aggressive here because I've got the power? Is it always?
I think it's really interesting. I mean, I think there's a few things with this that I really take away. I mean, like, when we look at certain industries, especially high pressured, high stress jobs, like especially in banking and finance and things like that, there is a tendency, and there are a lot of studies out there, including those from the Harvard Business Review, that have shown that in those sort of jobs where it's usually male dominated, that's kind of a, you know, cadence that they have, or traits that's not just encouraged but celebrated. So when it does be in a different, and in a different work environment, it's like, what the hell is going on? But actually that's really celebrating those roles, and it's seen as a path to success in terms of the way of getting the best of your employees. But I don't think that, you know, when we look at the stats, that, you know, people stay in those jobs or actually do very well or are productive, because it's shown that negative reinforcement is actually worse for productivity than positive reinforcement.
I think that's interesting. I think it's that short-termism is a very interesting sort of discussion point, because I guess if you're using that kind of the sort of the whip over the carrot approach, then that's unsustainable for that particular individual worker. But also, if you have a very singular management technique, then you're only going to really be able to attract and maintain a certain singular type of worker. So, Matilda, you've said that perhaps, you know, some people respond well to that. Well, if that's your only management technique, then you're going to surround yourself ultimately with only people who respond to that. And that, I mean, that may work, but that doesn't feel like a very healthy workforce that's going to be able to react to changing situations.
And I think there are studies that show that diversity in the workforce completely can just change a company for the better, not just in environment, but in how much money they make. Like, it does make companies more successful. So if you're only attracting a certain kind of person, that's not good business practice, as well as excluding a certain amount of people.
And I think when it comes to this kind of management technique, I mean, it does seem to be very derived from, you know, the goat, where it is a lot more reactive, aggressive. It's a lot more locking heads rather than actually having a more measured approach. And so the thing is, what happens with those kind of management techniques, it ends up filtering down and affecting workforce, like you say, productivity, improvement, actually getting the best out of your workers. And, you know, as we know that, you know, people don't leave companies, they leave bad bosses. And, you know, I know there's some stats around that somewhere, isn't there?
So there was some research done by an HR firm called Investors in People, and they asked people in January whether they were considering leaving their job in the next year. And 47% of people said they were going to look for a new job within the next 12 months. And 49%, almost half, said it was down to poor management. So that's far and away the most important reason that people want to leave their jobs. The next was because they're not paid enough. And the next was lack of career progression, which I think is to do with management as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that doesn't really surprise me at all, mainly because there was a study out by PwC, and they were talking about, they actually put into different pools of what kind of manager or what kind of employee like fit into these different brackets. And they called them dividers and multipliers. And so with dividers, that was usually certain behaviours. What would happen is that a divider would mean that they'd affect the whole supply chain, but for the worse. So imagine if you have like a bad boss and they are demoralizing their whole staff. They may think that the carrot and the stick, you know, was working, but actually what happens is that even if, let's say, they have five people and the way they're behaving actually demoralizes and makes them unproductive, actually divides the amount of, you know, productivity that five people should have. Whereas like a good boss is a multiplier, which means that even though they've only got five people, they're so productive that they almost, you know, produce about, you know, twice as much, have like a work force of five doing about a workforce of 10 people's usual productivity. And I think that was really interesting.
I think it's interesting. We sort of talked about this on recordings for our podcast as well, Britain is a Nation Of. And the interest is around what workers appear to want from their work in life as well. A study by YouGov recently discovered that 18% of workers wanted a job that they hate, would rather have a job that they hate that pays very well, whereas 64% said they would rather have a job they love that doesn't necessarily pay very much. And I think that is probably increasingly so, that people are trying to find that more healthy work-life balance. And I think that is putting, not pressure, but that's putting an impetus on managers and the companies that the managers work for to come up with better structures to reward good workers out with pay. Pay, I think it seems peculiarly British, particularly so. Everything seems to come back to pay. And that's not an unhealthy thing to talk about, although we're often very awkward talking about our individual pay. But it does seem to come back. Is there a problem? I'll throw some money at the problem. Whereas we need to be far more nuanced. I don't have the answers for that. But I think as a society, we should be really structurally working towards that.
I do think that we are getting to a point where it's a lot more recognised. So there was an analogy within the goats world that I just think was really interesting, and that's about the Judas goat. And so the Judas goat is basically this one goat that is trained to lead other goats and sheep to slaughter. Then at the end, its own life is spared. And it's like, wow, I've known some people like that before.
Right. So they're favoured, and so they'll push other people under the bus to keep their privileged position.
And or be just terrible. So then, like, you know, they may be really senior, but the rest, you know, the work is unproductive. It's not either bringing money or doing the job, but they're still saved. And I do think, like, that is, like, a core part of this weird middle management you know, discussion, that of bad bosses, because it's almost like, instead of thinking I'm a leader, so when we talk about a boss, that is a leader of people, and the idea is that it shouldn't just be there for the accolade or the money or things like that. It's about how you know, command this team, make things grow, bring success. And I think with those kind of bosses, they are dying out.
I hope so.
it's interesting. I'm not sure if that's the case or not. The anthropologist David Grieber sort of talks about this kind of idea of bullshit jobs, which seems to be that kind of middle management area where you're talking about. And he talks about the incredibly pernicious effect that people in those roles, so those kind of clerical professional roles, whose job isn't necessarily to be productive, but is to ensure people below them are more productive, and that often means efficiency savings, i.e. job losses. And therefore, you have a very, very tiered structure at work where the people who are actually being productive around them, their peers, seem to reduce in numbers, while the number of people at that middle management level don't seem to be necessarily affected by it. And then he talks about all the sorts of consequences that can have on the rise of populism, etc. And that's very interesting. But I don't know if we're moving towards fewer middle managers and more productive people. It feels like my hunch is that we're not creating, you know, people who are more productive. It feels like the roles that Britain as a country seems to suffer are those lower paid workers. You know, businesses, we've spoken about this, Leanna, businesses are very concerned about the reduction in immigration leading to a reduction in those production roles. And it does feel we're sort of moving in the wrong direction. What happened to all our skills? Rather than, it seems to be prioritising people skills rather than production skills.
Well, if that is the case, if we are getting more of these bullshit managers, then the data shows that that's really not a good thing. So another survey from YouGov, which was in August 2018, I think this really shows how much a bad boss can affect a workforce. So it asked people whether they had quit a job they cared deeply about because of a disagreement with their boss. And 25% said they had. I think that's a really high number. Not that many people. I think it's really amazing to have a job that you care deeply about. Mm. But even if you have that, a bad manager means that you're willing to give it up. I was quite surprised by how high that number was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not, just because I've been on Earth a bit longer. So like,
maybe I'm naive.
Yeah, had those moments where you're just like, oh, sweet Jesus. But I mean, it's really hard to know whether we're getting better or not. I mean, anecdotally, it feels like we're having more of these types of conversations. Mm-hmm. And it does feel like, I suppose, on corporate, you know, thinking of, you know, corporate level versus startups or maybe, you know, smaller privately owned businesses, that may be different. But I do certainly feel that, especially now in our day and age, there is more transparency over those kind of bad boss situations. I mean, recently there was this leaked memo that Yahoo Finance, US and UK, obtained that involved, allegedly, a HSBC boss, where a group of employees there actually put together a massive document and letter and memo and sent it to all the very high-up bosses at the bank. And it was all going on about how this guy was basically a Judas goat. You know, didn't use the word, but like all tick boxed, and how, you know, it was leading to people not being able to achieve their goals. There was a revolving door of employees, things like that. So I do think that obviously that, you know, kind of behavior does exist still. But I do think that's probably like one of the first times, like, I don't think in the 80s, if someone was acting like that, that it would have been as buried or not talked about or seen as a big deal. It would probably be like, hey, well done. You crack the whip.
You talked about the sort of mental health implications of bad bosses as well. What have you seen that kind of can talk that out a bit?
Well, that's a great question, Stu. So let's pivot to mental health when we come back.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So picking up on the mental health topic, when we talk about, you know, we're talking about bad bosses and bad management here, it's not just about how in the workplace that it affects productivity or losing talent. There's this one huge issue that really, and I'm really glad that we're talking more about it now, is that obviously how it can affect mental health. Mm-hmm. And so obviously when it comes to if you have a bad boss, how it can affect you on an individual level. So, I mean, you know, so has there been any examples where you, you know, in your guys' like, you know, working life that that's ever happened to?
I've had one, I would say, really bad boss. And I think while...
Is it Stu?
It's not Stu, I promise. I promise. No, it's not Stu. this was a while ago. And looking back, I was just much more miserable when I was working for this terrible boss. I think this person picked up a lot on really small mistakes that actually, in hindsight, I think weren't very important and didn't really acknowledge bigger tasks, even if they were going well, which made me feel like I was constantly performing badly, which then it just makes you miserable. And if you're not, if your self-worth is not very high, that definitely affects your mental health. Feeling of worthlessness is something I really associate with poor mental health.
Yeah, and Stu, I mean, you've worked in, you know, a number of really big newsrooms, and obviously, like, in the industry that we, us three, are all in, it is very fast-moving, it is highly stressful, there's deadlines that can be, like, 30 seconds to, you know, 1 hour to, you know. So, you know, have there been instances for you where you've been like, what is this, whether it's stress or way something's been handled, like, how have you ever felt that something's affected your mental health in that sense?
I would say yes. And I would say that's probably on reflection as much to do with the people above me as much as myself. I think it's very important as a worker, as an employee, to try and be aware of your working environment and ensure you don't make wrong decisions as well as the manager making wrong decisions. And I think, I mean, I don't think I'd say I've had the experience of Matilda, so I'm certainly not saying this is in any way an employee's fault, particularly when it comes to severe mental health issues. But in my experience, the sort of personal experience I've had, I feel like people, sort of workers, really need to be able to ensure that they, when they arrive at a place of work or a place of work they're going to join, they should really ensure that there are those kind of HR structures in place where you don't necessarily need to report sort of bad behaviour among bosses, but you feel that you need an outlet to talk about something away from people you either work with or the boss you may have. I feel like, you know, sort of the sort of journalism we have, there's almost about a badge of honour about this kind of presenteeism, working, you know, so fast you can't really do anything properly, mm-hmm. to an extent, and that's incredibly unhealthy, and workers should always be conscious of how they're working, and they should feel confident. And again, this only works if the structure is there for you to feel confident to be listened. You should feel able to say, this is what I'm meant to be doing at the moment. I'm meant to be doing X, Y, and Z. I can perform X to full functionality. I can't do Y and Z. Now, I'm presenting that to you. If you feel that's a business imperative, then you need to give me additional resource. Again, though, I can't stress enough, that only can come back to whether or not you have a manager that you perceive is going to listen to you. And I think that, and that's super, super important. If you have that, if you're lucky enough to have that as a worker, you should make the most of that, and you should really be conscious about how you're working as well, and make sure you make the most of a good manager. If you don't have a goat, if you've got someone else. I don't know what the opposite of a goat is in this world.
I don't know, sheep, but that's not exactly.
Quite right.
They look cute though.
That's also important.
Yeah, I mean, exactly that. I mean, like, one of the things that, to put this in perspective, especially in numbers, because I do love numbers, is that recently the charity Mind, they did this big survey. It's about 44,000 people, and obviously weighted it to get this number of, like, different diverse groups. But there is 48% of people had said that they've had a mental health problem in their current job, which is really upsetting. Mm. I mean, to hear that many people, and I can guarantee that most of those people, you know, suffer in silence, which is a huge problem. But I do think what has been really good recently is that there has been, you know, working towards understanding that there's a stigma about it. Like, as you're talking about, like, presenteeism, or you know, working huge amount of hours, taking a lot of, you know, crap from a bad boss, that kind of thing, it all weighs on you. And when we talk about mental health, it's not just about, you know, it's all on a spectrum, right? So it can be from having, you know, feeling a bit down or feeling a bit worse, that all the way up to severe depression, as well as other things. And I think one of the biggest things, talking about it.
What do we think of some of the telltale signs then? And as a manager, if you suspect someone to be struggling from that, what do we think people should be doing? What should managers be doing?
I think maybe you could notice something as small as a change in someone's mood. If they, you know, they used to be more chatty and more happy, and you notice them kind of drawing into themselves a little bit more, that would be quite a worrying sign, and sign of, you know, something like exhaustion. If you can't put the effort into maintaining personal relationships, it might mean that you're putting too much effort in somewhere else.
Yeah, and I think, like, what, you know, what's really important to understand is what behaviours can lead to those mental health problems. Like, so we were saying, like, when it comes to, you know, whether it's undermining people all the time, trying to sacrifice people, pushing them under a bus, things like that, of course that's going to have, you know, an impact on how someone sees doing their job. I mean, you're in work all the time. You spend more time in work than anywhere else. And every little thing that happens here all contributes to your day-to-day happiness. You can't just switch it off when you go back home. You know, we're not robots. So, I mean, I would ask, what would you say? Like, what would you, as a manager, identify, or what kind of things would you put in place?
Well, the things I think regular catch-ups is important, mm-hmm. the first thing. I think in terms of noticing if there's a problem, I think sort of patterns of absenteeism is important, I think. Too often, if someone is sort of late or not in the office for whatever reason, that can... I guess the gut reaction is to go, oh, how is this going to impact me or the rest of my team? But actually, we need to be aware that there could be another reason there. And I, my first step would be to certainly speak to our HR team in the first instance and say, I've just wondered about this. What would you advise I do in this particular example? I think involving HR, because everyone's situations are going to be different. I feel as a manager, if you feel that you have that support of your HR team to speak to someone, I think that's important. I think it's important that you try and keep things to a more work context as well when you're talking to someone. I've had been in situations where people have worked with me, perhaps brought too many personal problems for me to be able to resolve. It's sort of impossible for me to resolve almost. And sort of mixing up those two worlds too much can complicate things even further. And I think, again, I just think it's worth always pulling in HR. But in terms of that kind of manager sort of worker experience, constant sort of regular communication. I mean, where I work now is the first place where I've certainly had regular one-to-ones with people. It's not been the situation at previous places I've worked. And I think in sort of the world we work in now, where it's very common not to be in the same office as someone who reports to you or you report to them, I think that's even more important. We have the technology to have, you know, face-to-face one-to-ones, even if you're a few thousand miles apart from each other. And it's important to do that because otherwise things drift incredibly easily. Mm-hmm. And within that, I think it's always important for both manager and worker to try and come to those one-to-ones with an agenda, something you know you're going to talk about.
Yeah. I think like it all really does come down to that support and understanding there's only so much you can do as a manager. So I'd say that like one of the number one things is, first of all, try to do best practice, like we're saying, be a better manager, create a more, you know, inclusive and calmer environment and happy environment. And, you know, happier people are in their jobs, the less likely, of course, there's going to be mental health issues like manic depression and schizophrenia and things like that. But it's that may not necessarily be a cause of a bad manager that can exacerbate it, but there may be external things. But like you said, I mean, there'll be other elements that people can go to, like HR, and some companies do have working groups, but there's also charities as well. And I think it was really interesting that recently Prince William did a launch of a website with Mind about improving mental wellbeing in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's usually significant, because I know usually, like, you know, when it comes to royal family or a celebrity putting their name to something, mm-hmm. the thing is, it is more to so it will get covered and therefore, you know, it brings more prominence. But I think that was a huge, huge step in understanding that it is a huge deal. So, I mean, at the moment, what the launch of the website is for, let's say if you are in the workplace and as an employee you're looking for help, there is a gateway and tools and ways to approach it and how to do it. But also for maybe those companies, those managers that don't know how to handle it, that maybe don't understand how to take on and help support someone who has a personal issue all the way up to something quite severe.
Because I think it's often a problem with company structures that people get promoted into managerial roles because they've been successful in another role. But that doesn't mean that you're going to be a good manager of people.
Absolutely.
So it's really important to have resources for managers as well as employees if, you know, they're dealing with something that they feel like they haven't been trained to do. Maybe like you mentioned, Stu, kind of keeping your personal life separate. I think there's definitely a balance there, because if you have something going on in your personal life, it can massively affect the way you're working. And I think it's important that your manager knows about it. You know, they don't need to know every detail. Mm. But if you say, this is what's going on, it's going to be affecting my work at the moment, so I'm letting you know that that's going to happen. Otherwise, maybe people would jump to conclusions that there's another problem going on there.
Yeah, I think there always should be that environment where you are able to have that conversation with your boss and, you know, always be able to have that openness and at the same time them understanding when, if it gets too much, that there needs to be extra support in order to give the better, you know, track to getting better, to getting that, you know, help that you need. Because, again, we're not all robots. We are going to have life things that affect you just as much as, you know, the, you know, like discussed in your podcast, is that the more diverse we have as a workplace, we're going to have so many different people from different backgrounds, the way they react to things, neurodiversity, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we're all wired in different ways, and the way we may react as individuals as well as how react as a manager will be very, very different. And especially if it gets a bit unwieldy, like whether you're in big organizations or one that's even growing because it hasn't got a structure yet, it will inevitably lead to some people that do need help.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned before how much time we spend at work. I think maybe that's something that you don't think about enough. We spend so much time with our colleagues and so much time with our boss, which are people who we've been thrown together with rather than, you know, your friends who you choose and they're people you have similar interests with. So it takes more work to get along with people because you don't have a choice of who you spend your time with. Well, there was there's another YouGov survey about how many people like their colleagues. And only 2% say that they don't like any of their colleagues. So that's good. Actually, the majority of people like most of their colleagues. Most people like more than half.
That's really heartening.
Yeah, which was nice. And a lot of people said they like all of them, which is good. There's only a small amount of people who hate everyone they work with. Thank God.
I guess you're right. You're absolutely right. And like with your friends, often you make friends when you're sort of thrown together circumstance, whether it's school and university, whereas you... Not completely, but there will be occasions when you work in somewhere because you're actually passionate about that industry and you'll be working alongside other people who are also passionate about that industry. And I think, that's quite heartening. I'm pleased about that.
Yeah. a nice survey. Yeah.
Exactly. That's very nice. But yeah, so I mean, 100%. I mean, like, I think that's a really key thing. And, you know, when it comes to understanding and making the workplace better, is that the mental health aspect, I do think it's been really great that it's been centered on a lot. There was just a few other, you know, stats that I found really interesting, because it's not just, you know, just like the diversity case, is that obviously for social good, of course, there should be more diversity inclusion, but just like obviously helping with mental health, of course, for social good, like we have to, you know, improve our working practices and environment. But also, like both, there is the economic aspect as well, because another report, I should say, by the Institute of Directors, they were showing that actually the IED said that 4.5%, well, there's an economic hit of 4.5% on GDP from the impact of poor mental health on the industry, which is huge. And then when it comes to people being suffering at work, over like 500,000 Brits each year. And then that's a total loss of 24 days per worker. So even all these things factored in, it's just that it's something that really, really needs to be tackled.
Yeah, that's massive. That's a huge amount.
I think the mental health conversation has grown so much in the last, I guess, 5-10 years. I think actually it's incredibly heartening that the royal family have certainly are aware of this. You know, one of the most traditional institutions in our country is completely embracing this, and I think that can only send positive messages to people who, you know, if they need support to begin a conversation, anything that can feed into that is to be welcomed. But again, it feels like we're still some way away from baking that into our structures as a workforce. That the idea of flexibility and sort of if someone's struggling and they need greater flexibility, I still feel companies have got a long way to go. I still feel a lot of companies there's a doing it through gritted teeth element to it, because you don't want to set precedents. You don't want to set something that other people might follow. And I think we're some way from that. And I think we're in the right direction, but I think that has to start individual decision-making at manager level. But, you know, companies have to be fully on board with that as well.
Okay, well, at least we're on the right path, I should say. And it's a nice way to end. But thank you, Stu and Matilda, for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
And all you listeners, don't forget you can check and find our show notes and helpful articles under the Work and Management channel on uk.finance.yahoo.com. And if you like this episode, please rate, subscribe and tell your friends about us. And while you're at it, download the Yahoo Finance app for unparalleled access to data and alerts on the go. And last but not least, please subscribe and download the latest podcast from Yahoo News UK, Britain is a Nation of.
Yahoo Finance presents It's a Jungle Out There, produced by Liana Brinded and Caitlin Mercer. Recorded, edited, and mixed by Lolita Laguna. And music by Gregory Moore.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.